There's three things I've learned that they'll spend money on. And I heard this directly from a very large global beverage company. Safety.
Always.
Quality.
Always. Yep.
And cybersecurity. They will spend money on that. Without a doubt.
You
get any one of those three things that kick you in the teeth and you will, the checkbook will come out.
Yep. True. And I would say that would be the exact same three criteria if I were to ask pharma, or if I were to ask automotive, or I were to ask oil and gas, because those three things are what get you on the news.
Hey, I'm Dino Busalaki, the Chief Technology Officer and OT guy at Velta Technology.
Hi, I'm Jim, the COO and IT guy.
And I'm Craig Duckworth, President and CEO.
You're listening to the Industrial Cybersecurity Insider Show.
In each episode, we bring you the inside scoop on the world of industrial cybersecurity.
We talk about everything you don't know
that you should know. So plug in and power up. The show's about to get started.
Hi, my name is Dino Busalaki, and I'm the Chief Technology Officer of Velta Technology, one of the co-founders.
And I'm Craig Duckworth, the president and the CEO of Velta Technology and the co-founder as well. Today, we are going to talk about what we're seeing in the field. I know that you're out there all the time, Dino. We have clients and prospects that have purchased or are looking at purchasing an IDS or one of these industrial solutions. So what do they do next? What are you seeing? What's out there?
Well, let's start about the state of the state. So
it's
I've heard this from three major players, Cisco, Armis, Clarity.
Okay.
The OT IDS cybersecurity space, right? Top tier OT IDS platforms.
Yeah.
60% of OT environments are still in the unaware to awareness phase, meaning they haven't done anything. They know about OT cybersecurity. They know the term, but they haven't done anything. They're just aware of it. You got 30% that have started doing something, maybe a POV, maybe they got a couple of sites in. That's right. 90% out there are still kind of walking in the wilderness.
Pretty big number.
You got 10% that are actually at the operational integration phase. And those are going to be your very large companies. Those are your Fortune 100s. Those that have the pockets to be able to get the resources to focus on this and get after, right? Regulation might be driving it. Cybersecurity, the board of directors. There's a lot of different things that drive that. But that's kind of the state. And that's fresh. That's real. And we're seeing that.
We are.
And now you've started doing something and it's like, well, who executes? They decided to do a pilot, POV, proof of value. And they've got 120 sites, 200 sites global, right? Over 50, and there's plants in their fleet. And they've done one or two. And you have to get the oh, wow moment. It's like, holy smokes, there's a lot of stuff going on in here. I had no idea whether it's remote access, default configurations, malware could be in there. There's unencrypted passwords and a whole bevy of things that are going on inside that environment. It's new and lights being shed on it. And then the challenge is, well, now that you know this, who actually owns the responsibility? Trying to figure out who's going to move it to the next level to do this. It's challenging for these clients.
Well, you and I have had that conversation on several different episodes. Does IT own it? Does OT own it? Is it a mix of both? Because at the end of the day, the asset owners are really responsible for the remediation to fix the things that these IDS tools uncover, the issues that come out of them, the remediation, the let's call the where the rubber meets the road process of how do you start fixing these things. That's typically always fallen to the OT or operational technology teams, the controls engineers, not so much in IT, regardless of who owns the project, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, what I'm seeing is the automation technology industry. You think of the supply chain, everything from the Rockwell, Siemens, Schneiders, Honeywells, et cetera, yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
And then their partners, the OEMs and the system integrators, they're building practices. They're building partnering relationships with these OT cybersecurity firms. What I see happening is they're going to push IT out, meaning that the block and tackling to be able to get the visibility that you want at the control layer where safety is an issue, where quality is an issue, the asset ownership, to your point, is still going to be handled at that level. The remote access in there to solve problems and fix that. IT's role is going to default to receiving information up to their SIM, to their SOAR platforms, or to their SOC for risk metrics that they need to have it. And you want that data to be accurate. You don't want all the false positive stuff that usually gets pushed around, because even all these tools that we've seen deployed are getting to the level of visibility, what I want to call, if you think of the Purdue model, down to level two. Now, some would say, why do you want to be at that level? Well, there's PLCs down there. There's HMIs down there. There's drives down there. And there's soft PLCs down. There's a whole bevy of technology. Even though they put in an OT IDS platform, they're only seeing 30, 40, 50% or less of their OT assets.
Yeah, but it kind of goes back to the some of the other philosophies that, we kind of believe in. And again, IT, their responsibility is really to help the organization manage the business. They're there to help support it, to manage it. And OT is more the reason that the organization's in business, it's the cash register, it's what they make as an organization. So if you look at that separation and
it's the revenue. Who drives the revenue? IT's
but if you look at the separation, no, not at all. But they are there to help guide, help leverage, help OT manage that business is really that role.
Yeah, but they struggle with it because they don't understand the plant floor. They don't understand the process or operations. That's why I get back to, it's who do they buy from today to help them build those machine centers that they use to make their goods, and not just build them, but maintain, manage, and support them. So if you've got a filler that's putting liquid in a can or a bottle, tell me what IT's role is for that.
Give you a port address when you need it.
Right. So it's going to fall to who built the filler and who's supporting me if I can't figure out why my filler's got low levels, right?
It's the OEM.
It's the OEM. And so now the OEMs are and they're not trying to help. They're getting better and they're building practices.
They are.
I can tell you right now, you go to some of these major OEMs or EPCs, you know, EPCs like engineering procurement companies like Burns and Mac or the Barry Waymillers of the world and some of these others that are providing all these OEM and system engineering services are building cybersecurity practices. And I'm going to tell you right now, they're not talking to the CISO and the CIO.
No,
they're down there talking to the plant manager and the people in that plant, engineering teams, on how they're hardening that cybersecurity posture, because IT can't break through the control system barrier. I don't care what anybody says. I haven't witnessed. Now, there may be a few. There's exceptions. There's always exceptions. Because if IT was really doing their job, we wouldn't be sitting at 60 to 90% still unaware of what this stuff is if IT was doing it.
Well, part of it, again, goes back to IT still believes that the tools they have at their disposal that have been around for 15, 20, 30 years will work in the OT environment. And we all, as practitioners, know they absolutely will not. Well, they are not designed.
They'll buy a tool like Forescout or Tenable, or maybe they already have it as part of their IT cybersecurity platform. Mm-hmm. And then Tenable and Forescout, for example, both provide OT cybersecurity. But these companies aren't installing the OT IDS piece from Forescout or Tenable, right? So they're not. And even if they did, they wouldn't know how to install it down in that space. Right? One of the biggest challenges that we see with the work that we do is that when we put an OT IDS platform in a manufacturing facility, and we try to get it down as far as we can in the environment, it usually sits somewhere around level three of the Purdue model. If you're familiar with the Purdue model, ideally we get it three. And that'll get you a pretty good chunk of the environment. But sometimes it gives you more than you want because the networks are flat and you're picking up a lot of IT traffic.
But I would say we call that the north-south traffic, though. Well, that's the predominant traffic.
It is. But even then, the question then becomes, it's like, well, okay, you got 100 panels out there that have hundreds of other devices in that space and you're not seeing any of them. So then somebody has to go out there and open up those panels and look at that ICS infrastructure, look at those PLCs and see how many Ethernet cards it has in it. Look at the switch that's out there. Can it even span? Can it even run a span port on that?
But we do that.
We do that. But IT doesn't do that. No, I never see them out there on the plant floor at that level of trying to determine how am I going to get the metadata in this panel back to this platform that I just put in, right? And some of them, OEMs will tell you flat out, you can't put a device in that panel because it voids the warranty and support. What we do, though, is we have intermediate steps. And there's other technologies that we can use that, okay, I can't put a sensor or a collector in there, but I have other programs, I call them dissolvable executables, that I can run in that environment and I can get the patch build on that HMI. instead of having the base Windows 10, it tells me I got 800 CVEs when I've actually only got maybe 200. So I can get the bill. I can get a software bomb. And I know when that software was installed and was the last time it was used. Is it running? And I get the neighbors surrounding that control system. Who's talking to that machine center and what's it talking to? And I can feed that back into the baseline. So then I go from 30% of the OT assets I'm seeing when I install to maybe 70 or 80%.
Yeah.
Not continuously, but at least I got a better idea what I have out there. And I have a more accurate CVE or vulnerability management number to deal with versus something that's bogus. Because anybody who uses these tools, you should know that capturing Windows machines on a SPAN port is not going to give you the build number. So you have two choices. You either figure out how to get WMI down there and running. So some of the, you know, these OTA IDS platforms will provide active query, is what they call it. But even then, you can't snake your way all the way down across the backplane of the PLC to get to another PLC or to another set of control systems down there to get that stuff. So you have to do it on the other side. You have to do it for layer one. And that's the magic to make this work. And that's where I see the OT IDS. I know people talk about convergence. It's convergent, but it's really convergence from level three and up, potentially.
Yep, it is. I need 2 days before IT takes over that responsibility, because I'm going straight out and I'm going to buy a whole bunch of Red Wing stock, because not a single IT person owns a pair of hard-toed shoes, steel-toed shoes. So I'm going to need some advance notice, because there's going to be a huge run on those before they're allowed to go out and do that, just so you know. That's part of the problem.
All right.
But at the end of the day, though,
it can be a heavy lift. I mean, it can. Working in these plants, it can be a heavy lift. It's an industrial environment. You know, you might be walking a million square foot facility. You're going to be out there for maybe 2 days crawling through it. And sometimes you got to work around the weekends and maintenance windows, whenever, just to gain access to the machine centers when they're not in production. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's part of the job. And I will tell you, there's a lot of IT folks that they're not interested in doing that. That's just not someplace they want to be. But on the OT side, they do that all day, every day. So you might as well just keep it with them. Again,
yes, agree.
You said this many times in many podcasts. You got to think globally, but you got to act locally.
You need that local tribal knowledge. Yeah, absolutely.
You do. And it's not going to be some IT person sitting 500 miles away in some corporate office thinking that they can do what they need to do on that plant floor in order to do a better job of protecting it or finding out what's going on down there without going out there and really understanding it. And so it takes that level. You have to get to that piece to build that collection capability at those lower levels within that industrial environment. Anybody who says, we don't need to collect information down there, you can't take them seriously. You just can't, because we see so many vulnerabilities down there. And people might say, well, we're patching. You know, they never patch that stuff anyway. Okay, that's maybe true. But it doesn't mean that you can't segment. And then it's the remote access we find down there. That's the kicker, because nobody knows who's coming in and accessing that environment. They have no idea. And it changes all the time.
So once they put this solution in, let's say that they've done a POV, they had us or somebody else come in and do a bake-off, and they choose a technology and they decide what they want. They put it in. What happens then? Who's going to help them operationalize? Who's going to help them understand the data? Because it's like you say this 1,000 times a month, drinking from a fire hose. It's just coming as fast as it can. What do they do with the data? How do they begin to make, let's call them actionable decisions, risk decisions from the organization on what do we do with this stuff now? How do they manage that?
You can't manage what you're not measuring. What you're not measuring, right? So until you get to the point where I have a true asset inventory, the very first thing you got to do, you got to get an accurate asset inventory. And a snapshot in time is not good enough anymore. In some regulations, it's changing. That model is changing. And we have the technology. You know, when we were having this discussion with a CIO not too long ago, her comment was, do you have any idea how much it's going to cost to do that? And I'm like, yeah, I got a pretty good idea. And then it's like, where are we going to get the people from? It's not going to be you. It's going to be the people who work in this environment, who are accustomed to these machine centers and work in here every day and know how this plant operates. And know if I lose this group of machines over here, this plant goes down. And if you lose them, who gets remote access in order to try to fix it? And how do they get in? And then once they're in, how do you keep them where you need them instead of letting them wandering through the underbelly of that control environment and go from plant to plant, machine to machine, right? You don't know, you know, because you're not watching it. So Asset inventory identification, that's job one. Remote access. Yep. If you're thinking VPN is sufficient, again, you can't be taken seriously
anymore.
Yeah. Right? In this environment, there are two tools out there that are specific for these control systems. And if you're not looking at them, you're not paying attention. And then you can start building in your defensible architectures. You want to do continuous monitoring, you know, and it's not easy to put in collectors. That's a thought process. That's an engineering decision that has to be made, and maybe some negotiations again with the OEM. It's like, if I want to take out the cheap Hirschman switch you put in there, it doesn't span, or Phoenix Contact, for example, and I want to put in a smarter switch, that can I get a span port on it? Or if I can't take the switch out, can I put taps in there so I can get a span port, put my collector in there so I can collect that information? That's not an overnight decision. That's going to take a little bit of work and time to get that in. So for you customers out there who have bought Armis or Clarity or Cisco CyberVision or Nozomi, whatever, every machine center that you got coming into your plant that the engineering teams are buying throughout the year, lifecycle replacement, expansions, there's always machines coming in and out of that environment. If you're an Armis shop, you should be speccing in collectors into that machine center with the OEM that you're buying that stuff from. Well, and if you're not doing that, why aren't you doing that?
I will say part of the process and part of the concern is the human capital. These organizations, Dino, we see it all the time, don't have trained resources. Their teams that they have that are in that OT environment already have 5, 6, 8 jobs. They're working 75 hours a week, getting paid for 40 or 50 or whatever it is. And all they want to do at the end of the day is go home because they don't want another job. And this is another job for them.
You know what they do? They spend 6 and 7 figures for maintenance support from the OEMs to maintain and manage to support that stuff. So why wouldn't you just do the same thing for this?
Absolutely.
Right? Or you don't have it inside. Even to manage the machines you have today requires support from your OEM. And you pay them $250,000, $500,000, $1 million a year, depending on the size and scope of your organization, number of plants you have, to do that work. Well, you're going to have to do the same thing for this, right? You're going to have to put the same effort in there with organizations who work within that environment.
Yeah. You know, you take organization like ours or the many other ones around the country, do the same things where they focus on industrial IDS, industrial cyber platforms. They're familiar with the tools, the technologies, the techniques, the environment, the practitioners. You got to have somebody that understands.
Well, you know, we had a client, they wanted to put in an EDR. I'm not even going to tell you which EDR platform it was, but it was $1 million CapEx project to do it. And their industrial control system, compute platform, their HMIs, their engineering workstations, their historians, application servers, or VMs predominantly, not very much bare metal out there, just VMs. That $1 million CapEx project to put EDR cost them $8 million in OpEx to fix what that EDR system did to their ICS environment because of the resources that it consumed to run. And not only did it break applications, it slowed things down and they had to buy more storage. They had to buy more memory. They had to buy more processing capability just to run that EDR package.
But then you continue down that rabbit hole. What was their loss of production because of the downtime that product caused their manufacturing environment that they can't get back? $1 million, you add the $8 million, now you're at $9 million plus the other stuff. So you're at $10 million plus, it could have been a $25 million hit to them for a $1 million project.
Well, and that was an IT push, right? Hey, we're doing this on the enterprise. Surely we can do it on the control system side, right? And then went down there and did what to the bed? And so that's what happened. And this happens a lot because when it really comes down to when push comes to shove, we're talking about quality and safety and production process integrity. The only people that really have skin in the game are the people who work in those plants to make
absolutely
that happen, right?
At the end of the day.
And we see
those asset owners.
Because when we drag the IT guys down into the bowels of that plant, 9 in 10 of them just walk back to where they came from and say, yeah, that's not my problem. I don't want to mess with that stuff.
Yeah, well, it's not their problem. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is. And because they see Windows 7 and they see these layer 2 unmanaged Phoenix Contact switches out there that were put in 10 years ago or whatever, they don't want any responsibility for that stuff. They don't.
Right. But,
you know,
but
I'd love to talk to a CIO that wants to say, yeah, I want responsibility for that. So that means you're going to be the new plant manager. Your job is to make sure the plant runs every day.
Yeah.
That's your job. Oh, and you got 30 plants in your fleet, right?
But at the end of the day, though, all of this still falls from the ownership. If you look at the ultimate ownership of who's responsible, it's the CEO and the board of directors. There may be a risk manager. There may be a board of governance. There may be an EHS and safety. There's going to be all kinds of layers that are responsible, but it all is going to ultimately roll up to a C-level and the board to help manage this. And I think that's, again, part of that disconnect is how do they align with teams that understand? How do they bring the right resources to the table? Whether that's a tabletop exercise to do alignment within the organization, pick two or three technologies and start doing an evaluation, choose some success criteria for your organization. What makes the most sense for you? What's important for you as an organization?
There's three things I've learned that they'll spend money on. And I heard this directly from a very large global beverage company. Safety,
always,
quality,
always, yep,
and cybersecurity. They will spend money on that. Without a doubt, if you get any one of those three things that kick you in the teeth, and you will, the checkbook will come out.
Yep, true. And I would say that would be the exact same three criteria if I were to ask pharma, or if I were to ask automotive, or I were to ask oil and gas, because those three things are what get you on the news. Mm-hmm. You have an accident at a plant and you have two or three or a dozen people die. You're on the news. That's a bad day.
And if people are losing their jobs.
Yeah.
And you're in
oil and gas, you have a spill. Yeah.
You're getting fined. Your doors might close.
Well, okay, perfect. A real life example this week, that container ship that hit the Scott Key Bridge up in the Baltimore area that closed the port. What's the impact to not only
15 million a day. They said 15 million a day was the number I heard.
That's crazy.
Financial just to impact. Economic impact.
It's tragic to start with. Right. So, yeah.
Right. Well, and don't know what caused that crash, but I will tell you they're blamed as mechanical failures. Sometimes it could be a digital issue that caused that mechanical failure because of the sophistication and complexity of what we put into these control systems that are run by networks and software and applications, that they can cause mechanical failures. If they're interrupted, or if they're hacked, or if they're not operating as they're intended to, as they're supposed to. So I've seen a lot of process integrity issues that go to making quality issues. Safety is one of them. There's one story that I know that I'll tell you real quick. It had to do with a roofing company who had an engineer that made a change to a PLC, and it dumped 5 pounds more material per single slab, right?
Or square, yeah.
For each one of the singles, it had 5 pounds more material on it. And the way that it got caught was at the truck scales, because the guy running the truck scales was sitting there going, why are these trucks so damn heavy coming out of here? And so after a half a day of trucks going out really, really heavy, he's like, hey, you guys need to tell me why these trucks are way overweight. They make their way back, find out what happened. They fired the engineer. All those trucks that went had to come back, because that was all scrap. Because you couldn't put that on roofs, because it's too heavy. So the load was wrong. You had all that scrap, millions of dollars just trashed because somebody made a simple change.
The time it took
change
to do it,
And some people say, well, that change management. You know, change management control is a good thing in the control system environment. But if you don't have something watching that and alerting you to that, then you don't know that somebody made an online edit to that PLC or change program until you have a quality issue. And that had both, right? That was a quality issue and a safety issue. Not a cybersecurity issue, but the tools that we have catch that stuff.
Yes, they do.
Now, some clients will sit out there and go, well, you know, I'm a big Rockwell shop. I got Asset Center. And Asset Center will tell you that. Yeah, it will. That you're 2 in 10 in the Rockwell world. Yeah. And even some of the Rockwell stuff, because of its age, it doesn't even communicate and work with Asset Center. So you have to know the environment. You really, really do. And it takes a little bit of effort. Think of our cybersecurity assessments, our visibility studies, the work that we do. It's a 3-to-1 cost difference between an IT group doing the same thing on the carpeted space compared to what we do on the shop floor, because of the work is different. 3-to-1 difference. So for those of you out there thinking about cost, it's a 3-to-1 difference between the work that's done on the plant floor compared to what IT is doing in the office space.
Yeah, no, I get it. But it all kind of rolls back to asset visibility. You can't protect what you can't see. They have to start somewhere. This rolls all the way back to that very beginning statement that you made from what are you seeing in the field? And it's 90% of organizations, from the small ones that have one or two facilities to the large global Fortune 100s, are in an unaware or, holy cow, look what I've got to do state. Only 10% are truly beginning the journey and are taking steps to get better period over period. And that has to change. It has to change. We got to see
change. It is a shock. If you're in that 30% that's got that old wow moment, you got a lot of decisions to make.
Yeah,
you do. And it'll slow you down because we can always move faster than the client can doing what we do. Yeah. But when you start putting a spotlight on all the crummy things that are going on inside their environment that they need to start figuring out how to deal with it, it slows them down internally. And then you get, we need to redesign our network. No, these tools help you get to that point. And there's other blocking and tackling defensible architecture moves you can make that are much more cost effective, saying, well, we're just going to redesign the whole plant network. You're not, because you're not going to go out there and start ripping switches out of panels. You'll sit at the level 4 of the IDF environment and try to tap down OT and separate yourself between the two. That's what I see, is IT is always trying to protect themselves from OT.
Well, it should be both ways. Why do I have to trust you, but why won't you trust me?
That's right. That's exactly right. And 1 in 10 will have their own firewall on the OT side and have a true IDMZ with a firewall at 3-4 and a firewall down for the OT world. And that firewall is managed and controlled by OT.
Yep.
And anybody, again, that thinks that they can handle it differently, you can't take them seriously. They don't understand. All I would say is you're just trying to protect yourself from your OT people, because down here, you don't care what goes on down there. It's not your problem. They need to admit that. And they need to tell their senior management that it's like, look, we stop at 4. What happens from 3 down, you need to find people that are better at this than we are.
Yeah. Well, that was a great conversation. It really helps. Hopefully, organizations can see, they take a look at themselves, look internally and say, okay, where are we in this journey? Has our teams identified something? Have we taken the steps needed to begin the journey and really look at it hard and figure out what's next steps? Because this is not going to go away, guys and ladies. This is not going away.
Yeah, you got to look at how you handle technology today. Is your model to manage it all internally and hire your own staff, you know, where you've got hundreds of people working for you that work for the CIO and the CISO, and that's how you manage it? Or do you outsource? You just have a few key individuals, and their job is to manage all these different groups, service providers, for example, and contractors and consultants, and that's how they do it. Well, if that's your model, you got to look at the model for the plant floor. Sometimes that'll fit down here, because right now, building a practice of your own on the OT cybersecurity front is not an overnight thing.
Not at all. Not at all.
And so you're going to have to go find the Schneiders, the Siemens, the Rockwells, the Honeywells, their partners, the EPCs, the Velta Technologies that go and do just that. That's all we do.
Agreed.
Yep.
All right, Dino, great conversation. Thank you very much. Again, it's always great to hear what's out in the field as you're out doing your journey. So
have a good weekend.
Yep. You too. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for tuning in to the Industrial Cybersecurity Insider Podcast. To stay up to date with our latest episodes, be sure to click the follow or subscribe button now. And if you found this podcast helpful or have a topic you'd like us to cover, please leave us a review or let us know. If you're interested in learning more about Velta technology and how you can get safer sooner, visit veltatech.com. That's VeltaTech.com. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.